go to Numbers 19. I want us to quickly read the entire chapter so to get this stuff back in our head. This is the in my opinion, what we as a body mostly lack, and one of the reasons that there's so much so little apparent growth or advancement is spiritually because we've reached a point where we have touched on the meaning of touching a dead body, but we haven't apprehended it. And so God's not going to let this get any bigger unless this is, and that is not going to even let any more revelation happen unless this is dealt with. Does anybody remember why the ashes of the red heifer are important?
From the dead body.
Okay. What does it mean to touch? How does it? What does it spiritually mean to touch a dead body or come in contact
look
with a dead body?
It's to be in the house. It's like the past. It's associated with the past.
But it's also the body itself. Or to be in a house where the body is touched. In other words, or if we come in here and I talk to you how to solve natural problems, i.e. Ann Landering, then I am defiling this house. If I'm doing anything other than preaching of the cross, I am defiling the house, and anyone enters the house is defiled. If you're in a state of defilement, by definition, you cannot advance in the nation of Israel. So there can be no revelation. If you go back and analyze self, you've touched the dead body. I mean, I hate to tell you this, friends, but any time that you're not in a state of abandonment of self, you've touched a dead body. Anytime you've taken self and projected self into the future or considered self in the past, you've touched a dead body. And we've reached a point where the touching of the dead body is becoming, we are a people of necrophilia. All we do and have been for sustenance lately, for excitement, is having intercourse with dead bodies. And it has to be seen, apprehended, and dealt with so that we as a people can move on towards the New Jerusalem. Is that clear? Does everybody have a little taste of it? A little understanding of it?
Do you ever, wonder if you're responsible why that things haven't progressed anymore? Do you ever...
No, because that then would be touching a dead body. No, I mean, that obviously
that
was what my dad, it hasn't even, the thing to teach what I'm going to teach tonight never entered my mind until I sat down here. Because the only thing I knew was I was supposed to talk about the red heifer. I didn't know what dimension it was going to take. I mean, I've long since fled the vanity of thinking about myself in those areas.
It's funny to me because that's all I used to ever do was worry about self-improvement. You know, that was the first 50 or 30 years of my life or whatever. But it's like last night we were sitting there and I was trying to go back and think about how I used to think about stuff, and I can't even hardly think about it. It's just like it's a closed door, and there's really not even any interest.
But can you see? Just if, can you see why, from the standpoint of the mystery of discipleship, the first requirement of a disciple, abandon yourself. If I do not abandon myself, then by definition, I've entered into a state of defilement. I mean, this isn't something that is optional. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether you understand it or not. It doesn't matter whether. The fact is if you have. Remember when we studied it? It doesn't matter how deep the bone was buried in the earth. If you walked over that, unless there was the right distance, you know, the distance that would cause it not to be able to have defilement. Remember, it was 18.
Solid rotten rock. 22 inches of solid rock.
Yeah, but there had to be, no, it doesn't matter how far deep it was. There had to be, there had to be an opening in the rock.
Air slate.
Remember?
No, but
remember,
the kid has to walk across to do the.
That's in the House of Stones, and he does the stuff. But anyway, there's a whole. But this is like some of the other stuff that we've studied in Stealth. You heard it, but you didn't hear it.
If you didn't apprehend it, you're not going to remember it, right?
Does that have something to do with why people are buried 6 feet deep or anything like that?
No. No, that's a Gentile custom. But can you see the infinite number of ways that you can be defiled by a dead body if you don't abandon yourself? Let me show you something. This is being Levitically unclean. Do you understand that? It's not sin. If Jesus Christ walked over an unmarked grave, by definition, by the law, he's Levitically unclean in the same way he was if he touched a leper.
So when he came through Samaria?
When he walked in Samaria, he was Levitically unclean. Because the assumption was that the bones had been, for a lot of reasons. The idea, you couldn't eat with a Gentile. Why? Because the assumption was that the Gentile had touched a dead body. And if you ate with them and had intercourse with them, that you would make you Levitically unclean. And the death, touching the death, I mean, you've got to get in your mind the difference between sin and uncleanness.
It's hard to grasp.
Uncleanness, I'm weird. Right? There's something. Because I'm overwhelmed with how much of my life I think I spend unclean. And I think part of the reason is because I've got that messed up with sin.
That's why.
Because, somebody in my Bible study fucks up. And it's like, I decide I'm in trouble. Or the most recent one, maybe not the most recent, but a recent one, was yesterday over this thing with in my mind, I had probably made a mistake, and I'm responding to it within myself like it's a sin. And, look, I mean, all that's going on is because I feel guilty.
Listen, the greatest trick that the Antichrist can put on this body of people is to cause them to be confused over sin versus uncleanness. The only way you'll ever understand uncleanness is to understand Jesus Christ, the Son of God, was Levitically unclean on numerous occasions, and he was without sin. If you don't understand that, then we've got to stop everything until there's an understanding of the difference between sin and unclean. Because, again, you're right. What happens is the Antichrist can do to you right now, if you do not understand this difference, is he can immobilize you with guilt. The reason is you try to apprehend the blood for the forgiveness of being unclean. They're totally different universes. They don't touch each other.
Their consequences are different, aren't
Everything is different. They're not even in the same universe.
I'm just sitting here. I'm sitting here realizing I get weird over trespasses, and I get weird over uncleanness. I get weird over sin.
Well, obviously, we don't have as a group. We don't have much understanding of the difference here.
Well, I want you to understand. I want you to hear this.
Maybe a problem.
In 1988. Wasn't that long ago? We spent almost 4 months studying the ashes of the red heifer in intimate detail. And as I suspicioned, but
these guys fault me.
Huh?
That's their fault.
Glad to be
here. They weren't here then.
That's why it's their fault.
In 87, we spent a long, long time studying. Saying the trespass offerings, burn offerings.
No, we got that.
Yeah, I mean, I dig part of
that. Do you understand the implications of this? Since we're saved and sanctified and all that as a body, all this knowledge does you absolutely no good unless we all comprehend this. So, you know, it behooves you to help us understand.
That's what's so absolutely frightening.
This is a chain that nothing.
Well, it's no wonder a lot of us always think we're going to get thrown out. But well, the idea of getting thrown out for a trespass or getting thrown out for being unclean is crazy.
I'm worried about getting. I don't know if I'm worried about getting thrown out. Maybe deep down I am forgetting to.
Well, you are out.
Yeah, I am out. You know, I mean, about
hear me.
Forgetting to
stop, 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 stop. If I am worried about being thrown out, I'm out. Your worst fear has already come upon you. And the Lord spake unto Moses and unto Aaron, saying, this is the ordinance of the law which the Lord hath commanded, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, that they may bring thee a red heifer without spot, wherein is no blemish, and upon which never came a yoke or yoke. And you shall give her unto Eleazar the priest, that he may bring her forth without the camp, and one shall slay her before his face. And Eleazar the priest shall take of her blood with his finger, and sprinkle of her blood directly before the tabernacle of the congregation 7 times. And one shall burn the heifer in his sight, her skin and her flesh, her blood with her dung shall he burn. And the priest shall take cedar wood and hyssop and scarlet and cast it into the midst of the burning of the heifer. Then the priest shall wash his clothes and he shall bathe his flesh in water, and afterward he shall come into the camp, and the priest, just because he did this thing, shall be unclean till evening.
Well, he's not in trouble. He's just unclean.
He's unclean because he participated in the preparation of the ashes of the red heifer.
Yeah.
He's unclean.
He hasn't really done anything yet with unclean people. He's just done that.
He's unclean by the law. The law is spiritual. Do you understand? There is nothing that's in this book that doesn't affect you. Doesn't matter whether you understand it. I write unto you that know the law. Doesn't affect, we're not talking about whether you're saved, whether you're sanctified, all of those, whether you're on your way to the mercy seat, all those are true, but you're unclean. Son of God, Jesus Christ, unclean umpteen times. Couldn't partake of the fellowship of the mystery. Couldn't partake of the fellowship of the body. He was unclean.
Is that the main consequences? If you're unclean, you're separate.
You're not separate. If you're unclean, you're separated, and that's a big difference.
Yeah.
For the time required.
Right.
And while you're separated, you are...
You have no, you can't commune, you can't eat with, you can't touch, you can't partake in any of the sacrifices, you can't partake in any of the offerings, you can't have fellowship, you can't pray, you're unclean. I have a feeling we better start at the beginning on this.
You think.
If I say to you, you're unclean as the priest, my office of priest declares you unclean, what your response is to get mad at me. Because you think I've in some way said you're not saved, you're not going to heaven, you're not sanctified, you're not in your way to New Jerusalem, you're not part of the body. Being unclean has nothing to do, it has to do with a mystery that we don't understand. It's a mystery of the time to understand your salvation. I know that's true. I know that the reason that there is a state of being of unclean is so it's the time in which you truly can understand what it means to work out your own salvation in fear and trembling.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with guilt. You're not consumed with self. You're not, you know, you're unclean. It's no big deal. But, you know, look at, if you look at modern...
Shut up to faith.
No, you're unclean. You can't pray. Huh. Modern Christianity has succeeded in this confusion. If you look at any book that I've ever seen lately, that's been printed in the last 200 years, which is most of them, they talk about leprosy as sin, and they never talk about the ashes of the red heifer. It's obvious that leprosy is sin. Well, you dumb fuck, it's not sin at all. Jesus Christ was unclean because he touched a leper by the law. He fulfilled the law, therefore he had to be. No, it's leprosy is a sign of sin. No, it's not. It's a sign of being unclean.
Look at leprosy of the forehead.
Unclean. Doesn't mean he's never, it doesn't mean that he is... Sanctified, it doesn't mean he's not a nation of Israel.
What about the king of Israel?
Doesn't mean he's not a nation of Israel. Doesn't mean that he's not going to heaven. Means he's got leprosy. He's unclean. Until he knows that his leprosy isn't just the leprosy of the forehead. He knows that the leprosy covers him from the top of his head to the bottom of his feet, then he's clean instantly. He's, by as soon as the priest declares him clean. You're resisting, there's huge resistance here from this, from you on this.
Mother it.
Okay, I sort of feel something.
I'm trying to think, the only example that I, you know, that I'm, that's clear, I mean, the worst case example, you know, is this king,
Uzziah.
You know, and Uzziah, who, I mean, I can't imagine him, I mean, it's like, he's cut off from everything, and how, I mean, it's a horrible thing, and yet it's not sin for what he did. I don't know how to think about it. You know,
Don't think about it from the one you don't know how to think about it. Think about it from one you know how to think about it. I can show you 15 cases in the law where what Jesus Christ did would cause him to be unclean for either till evening or for 7 days. And he would have to go through the laws of purification in order to enter back into and partake of the offerings and partake of the fellowship of the mystery of the feasts. Okay? Concentrate on what you can understand. Not in what you don't understand.
Yeah, but it's those things that make me afraid.
Yeah, but it's those things where the Antichrist takes you by the balls and whips you around.
Yeah.
Cast it down until the time appointed of the Father. Then it will apprehend you. There's just like everything else in all the offerings, there's confusion at the edges.
Yeah.
Remember in the offerings that the sin offering in the edges is confused with the peace offering, is confused with the trespass offering? Well, here so also. On the edges, uncleanness is confused with sin. That's why it's necessary that we apprehend with clarity.
Now, is this where we're going to get clear between the difference between unclean and sin?
No,
we're not.
No, this what we're here doing is so that you stop touching a dead body, so that you stop providing a house where the dead body is touched by everybody in the community, and then they're unclean. They don't know why. It's so you stop dissecting bodies in Bible study in the name of Bible study. But I can't, I mean, the one thing I know about this is that this can never be apprehended unless there's a need to apprehend it.
I think there's a need, it's just, you know, it is so, like Harry was saying, it's so muddled together within us. I can't, you know, that the aloneness of having touched the dead body that's caused is such a factor in some of our makeup that, you know, Garrett might not even know. You know, I mean, he might could operate like that. You might could operate like that. You know, but some people, you know, it's like, and it consumes them, and so then they build all kinds of other, you know, deals. And so to get a clear, definitive understanding of it does seem important.
Oh, I agree, totally.
Well, when I hear you say, if you're unclean, you can't pray. If you're unclean, you can't have communion. And if you're unclean, you can't have fellowship. And if you're unclean, you can't take part in the feast. Then my ears perk up and I start to listen. I go, wait a minute, this sounds like something I need to know.
Yes,
because most of the time I feel like I can't really pray. And I don't feel separate all the time, but lots of times I'll be sitting at a Seder meal and I'll become aware of myself. And I'll look around and I'll see, I'll be looking at something rather than being in something. And I'm sick and tired of being aware of myself, and I'm sick and tired of feeling, you know, guilty or wrong or something. And so I certainly feel like I have a need.
And the thing,
and
is,
I know I have a need.
The thing that you said about the way to not be unclean from leprosy is to see yourself totally leprous. That seems to be a big key here. You know, to,
yeah, but we're not talking about that. We're talking about the ashes. We're talking about death.
Yeah. That doesn't apply then to the.
No, the ashes of the red heifer are for touching a dead body. It's the other. The turtle dove. I mean the.
I'm sick and tired of forgetting that I'm forgiven and accepted and all those things. And walking around thinking that I'm not, when really what I'm doing is I'm simply walking around unclean. But I'm a fool.
What I don't want you to do is literalize this. Look, I don't know about you. I know about me in this, and forgive me for doing this. But here's what I know. I know that I was chosen in him from before the foundation of the world. I know that I have never once in my entire life been separate from God and separate from the source of life. I didn't know that at those times, but I know it now. I know that everything that has ever happened to me, everything that was ever transpired in my life and in all my ancestors' life was necessary in order to bring me to this point. I know that there is nothing on the face of the earth or in hell, or in heaven, or in any other place that can separate me. And I know that I'd be far happier if right now, at this instant, an angel came and took my life. That's where I want to be. No.
That makes you clean.
Huh?
Then you're clean.
No, it has nothing to do with that. Those are the facts that I know about my life. I know, and a more important fact, and the fact I had to know before I could teach, I knew that even if I knew I was going to hell without hope, that I would have to do exactly what I'm doing. And that's the requirement to teach. I would have to live exactly like I'm living, and I would have to do exactly what I'm doing because it's my nature. Now, does any of those five things communicate to anybody else?
Yeah, all of them.
Okay, now, during the course of life, an infinite number of things can happen to me which cause me either to, for a time, become leprous, which cause me to, for a time, have to partake of the waters of jealousy in order to return to fellowship, and touching a dead body, and many times, whether it's named my fault, where I'm unclean, where I am Levitically, by the law, unclean. It doesn't have any effect on the five points. I was Levitically unclean yesterday, and I knew it, and I was unclean until evening, and I tried to warn people to stay away from me. But by the time the sun set, I also knew that I had been cleansed.
Yeah.
And so I was able to teach. Now, I didn't go say this, I've done this, and I've done this, but I knew it. I knew exactly how it happened. I knew when it happened, I knew how it happened, I knew why it happened. And I knew that I was unclean. But I also knew that I would be clean by evening. And so I didn't worry about it.
How did you get clean?
Huh? Just by apprehending what Christ had finished.
Yes. The work of Christ. That's what it says, right?
But for a time, I didn't even want to think about what Christ had finished. I was so furious at these attorneys that I wanted to kill them. That wasn't sin. I didn't sin against anybody. It didn't affect my salvation. It didn't affect who I am. For a time, I was unclean. I didn't go on a big trip about it and say, oh, poor me. Oh, does this mean that I'm I just knew I was unclean. And when I recognized it, I said to those around me, stay away from me.
I remember it when she said that.
Now, last night in Bananas, we had a long talk about this thing that...
Can I say something before you go ahead? So this act that caused you to be unclean... Many in here would take that same act and say, I have sinned.
Well, they wouldn't know what it was. They'd go through some self-trip.
Yeah.
Oh, I shouldn't do this. Oh, I should be this. Oh, shouldn't I do that?
Do a whole bunch of stuff as a result of it.
Right. They wouldn't say simply, oh, shit, I'm unclean. Here it is. And then wait it out and do what, you know, proper thing. They would go on unmeasurable other trips.
Right, because that would lead them so deep into...
And that's where the trick of the Antichrist...
Right.
Wallowing around in it.
Several of them.
So that's why it's very important that we comprehend this.
That's right.
Eating the dead body.
Would it have been a trespass if you'd gotten on the phone and I mean, where does trespass... Sin's been dealt with.
So is trespass.
So is trespass.
So is uncleanness.
So...
Only thing I have to do is apprehend it. I don't have to jump through hoops.
Okay.
I don't have to try to analyze which one it was. I mean, I happen to know at the time, but sometimes you don't.
But you don't know all the time.
But I know, yes, I do. I know this. I know that my sin, myself, is forever covered because I'm dead. I'm at the cross. I mean, I never worry about whether Ole is saved or not, or any of those kind of shit anymore. I know that any trespass is dealt with by the blood of Christ. And so I realize if something happens that I all of a sudden I don't feel something, then my intuitiveness, my instant intuition is to know it has something to do with the waters of purification. And so sometimes I think about it and try to figure it out. Sometimes I don't. Sometimes I just let it ride. Let it take its. I don't spend a lot of time analyzing this shit about me. Because I know at the core that by one offering he has perfected forever them that are sanctified. And that one offering included all of the waters of purification and all of the things of the blood. I don't have to sweat it.
Somebody comes in your office at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, like, really bizarre. I mean, the chances are pretty good doing what you do that at some point during the day you're going to become unclean, aren't they?
No question.
Every day.
Every day.
By nature of what you do.
No question. Every day.
And actually, for most of us, by nature of living together, by nature of being this close, it's going to happen, isn't it?
And if he that toucheth the dead body of any man shall be unclean 7 days. No.
Oh.
7 days. That's why we know. That's why we redeem the time. Yeah. If I didn't know what redeeming the time was, I would spend my entire life unclean because I would... I mean, all I have to do is apprehend it, and I've redeemed the time. I've redeemed the 7 days.
So if you can't apprehend it, then you have to go to the body and let them help you apprehend it.
And this also touches back on the thing about the end of the day being determined.
Yeah, everything.
Yeah.
That sunset, you can't
deal with
it. You have to deal with it. Because if you can't, then you can't redeem the time. And you're locked in time, and God's got to look at you in time. You don't got to look at you in time. Over water or blood. But can you understand if you can apprehend this water stuff? And believe me, you know what I've tried to do? I've gone to seminaries. I've gone to Christian bookstores. I've even gotten unclean by going into a Christian bookstore.
Ooh.
I've looked on databases and computers for anyone to have taught them this. There isn't anybody. And it just pisses me off.
What's really cool to see the necessity of being in community and body in a house.
You never know this if you're in community. You'd never be able to apprehend it if you weren't in community.
Well, and you'd never be able to become unclean to work out your own salvation.
That's right.
Did work out your salvation have anything to do with being unclean?
No, you'd never have to be in the position of aloneness. Let's read the rest of it. Then the priest shall wash his clothes, and he shall bathe in his flesh in water, and afterward he shall come into the camp, and the priest shall be unclean until the evening. And he that burneth her shall wash his clothes in water and bathe his flesh in water and shall be unclean until the evening. And a man that is clean shall gather up the ashes of the heifer and lay them up without the camp in a clean place. And it shall be kept for the congregation of the children of Israel for a water of separation. It is a purification for sin. Now, what does that mean? How can we rationalize? It's a water of separation. It's a purification for sin. It's the same thing that you understand at the how can I say this? At the base, at the core level, you know, somebody that's learned may understand and say, this is the result. Waters, and this is the result of sin, and this is the result of uncleanness. But do you understand, for you as an individual, at the core of your being, that it has the same net effect?
Say it again.
What has the same effect?
Whether it's sin
or
uncleanness.
Yeah.
It has the same net effect.
Is it because we don't understand the difference,
no,
or it just does?
and all of us at some point it does. Hopefully by the apprehension of it, we can separate it and have some clarity on it. But at the core, and that's what Larry's talking about, when you know, over Uzziah, who took the censer in his hand and was struck with leprosy in his forehead. The leprosy was the kind of leprosy that caused him to be alone forever. But the forever, again, is redemptive. It's forever alone until he sees that he's leprous from the top of his foot to the bottom of his head. I mean, top of his head to the bottom of his foot. Then by that act of seeing it, he has redeemed the time. He is taken out of forever into eternity.
And they didn't kill him. They didn't drive him out of Israel. They put him in a house by himself in the palace. A several house.
It wasn't in a palace, but that's another story. Okay? And he that gathereth the ashes of the heifer shall wash his clothes and be unclean until the evening. And it shall be unto the children of Israel and unto the stranger that sojourneth among them for a statute forever. What is a statute? Remember the word?
Something you can't do.
Statute, by definition, is something you cannot do. There's commandments, there's laws, commandments, and statutes.
A statute is something you can't do.
Otherwise, there had to be statutes in the law, otherwise some flesh may get it right. So all he can do is apprehend it. I don't want to get into that. I mean, there's two.
It's a spider web.
It isn't. It's so simple.
Observe to do.
It's black and white. It's on or off. He that gathereth the ashes of a heifer shall wash his clothes and be unclean until evening, and it shall be unto the children of Israel, unto the stranger that sojourneth among them, a statute forever. So it doesn't matter whether you're, I mean, just because the word statute is the word I can't remember right now in the Hebrew, but there's Torah, mitzvah, and statute. Just because you couldn't do it didn't exempt you from it. Do you understand that? Do you understand in your mind, if you don't understand it, it exempts you?
Yeah.
Do you hear that? Does everybody know what I mean? So you try not to hear stuff, or you try, or you think, you con yourself and think you're really trying, but internally you're trying not to.
So you won't be subject to it.
So, yeah.
Possible deniability.
He that toucheth a dead body of any man or any soul shall be unclean for 7 days. Now, the law didn't say that I don't have to physically touch Harry to touch Harry. You understand? The law, even from in the physical law, talked about being in the same room or the same area of the dead body made me unclean. We know that Christ laid his hands on the girl from Tyre, was it? We don't know whether he touched Lazarus or not, but we know by the law that he was Levitically unclean in both cases, that he could not partake of fellowship. He was unclean, Levitically unclean, and required the ashes of the red heifer when he walked across Samaria, when he was in Samaria.
And it didn't necessarily mean that you shouldn't do those things.
Had nothing to do with it.
He was unclean when he died.
He was unclean when he died. And he defiled the apostles when he appeared to them after death. Can you rock that?
He wasn't dead then, though, was he? Because he'd been,
the body was dead.
The body was dead.
But he was raised from the dead. Which,
yeah.
Oh, boy. I think I'm getting an inkling that grace is a much bigger thing than I had considered it to be.
I want you to get the inkling.
It's like it's not a question.
That the purpose of the law is to shut up your friggin' mouth and your friggin' minds. Totally. That's why we resist hearing this stuff. Because our religion has taught us that we take selective pieces of the law that we think we sometimes can do, we try to do them, and then we get the right to feel guilty for not doing them, and we think we don't like to feel guilty, but we really do, because if we feel guilty, that means we think we could have done it right. And so we walk in this self-deification position, and it's idiotic. Because you will see, the more you apprehend it, the more the purpose of this law isn't to give you something to do, it's to shut you up. And then slowly but surely apprehend the grace of Christ and the finished work of the offerings. Without the slightest hint of self-justification.
It's like if you're shut up, then God has a chance to do the work that he...
Remember that shut up means, it doesn't just shut up the talk, it shut up the mind talk. The only way that there can be silence in the temple is by the apprehension of the law. Because otherwise, the mind will try to figure a way out.
Or justify itself.
Right.
A billion times you've heard, well, how could a loving God let people's babies starve and all that kind of stuff from people who just don't see? But explain to me a God that would set out a bunch of rules for human beings that contain absolute landmines. I mean, he sets out a bunch of rules, and every once in a while, like every tenth one, there's one that's absolutely impossible. Nobody can keep it. It's designed that way. That's the way he did it. He did it on purpose. He knew you couldn't do it, and that's his plan. That's not a God that God doesn't measure up to the human image of God. It's ultimately unfair.
Remember last night, we're studying the stars, and we get to Libra, the scale, and it's the star, the bottom part of the scale is... I'm not going to the name of the star, but anyway, it means the price that's eternally deficient.
Whoa.
And then the top part of the scale is the price that eternally covers. And it's. You remember whenever your mind has gone into the position of cause and effect, that if I do this, then this will happen, and you've gone into Babylon. And you have to wait until there is the awesomeness of seeing, in one way or another, the finger of God writing on the wall of your temple, that you have been weighed in the balance and found eternally lacking. You can do nothing about it. You're eternally lacking. And then grace is possible. Then you can come out of the people, and you can come out of the nations, then you can forget the friggin' crap in the world. Then salvation and the process of salvation can begin. But it's only when you have been found in the balance, weighed in the balance, and found eternally lacking, and you see it, that salvation can truly begin. Yeah, I write unto you those that are escaped from the nations.
That's the way out.
He that toucheth the dead body of any man shall be unclean 7 days. He shall purify himself with it on the third day, and on the seventh day he shall be clean. But if he purify not himself the third day, then the seventh day he shall not be clean. That's why they had to arrive 10 days before the feasts, on the pilgrimage feasts. So that in case they missed the first third day, they had a second chance. You understand? Whosoever toucheth the dead body of any man that is dead, and purifieth not himself, he defileth the tabernacle of the Lord, and that soul shall be cut off from Israel, because the water of separation was not sprinkled upon him. He shall be unclean, his uncleanness is yet upon him. He's cut off from the house of Israel forever. Why? Because he didn't take advantage of the waters. And so uncleanness became sin. Do you see it? The refusal to be cleansed causes eternal separation. And this is the law. When a man dieth in a tent, all that come into the tent and all that is in the tent should be unclean 7 days. Now, guess who he's talking about, folks? When you pick up the cross, all that's inside you is unclean because you have accepted your death. I am crucified. I mean, he's talking about a lot of other stuff, too. And everything that's in the house is unclean. Can you hear that a little bit? So don't touch it. Don't return.
A little difficult then to pick up the cross as a Lone Ranger.
Well, the point, yeah, because there's no provision for your provision for your cleanliness. Well, that's not true. I mean, it's already been done. So he can apprehend it. I mean, but it's easier to apprehend if there's a body. I mean, hear me. You don't have to have any of this knowledge to be saved. Don't. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying if you don't have this knowledge, you can't continue on in the mystery of God. But I'm saying that this is here for a purpose. This is the law. When a man dieth in the tent or in the tabernacle, in the temple, all that come into the tent and all that is in the tent shall be unclean 7 days. Why 7 days? It's the end of time. You understand? You see, it's the cycle. The seven is the total cycle of the end. Whosoever toucheth one that is slain with the sword in the open field, or a dead body, or a bone of a man, or a grave, shall be unclean. Remember, it's not that he's unclean for 7 days and then he's clean. He's unclean for 7 days and then he has the opportunity to be cleansed with the ashes of the red heifer. If he doesn't take advantage of that opportunity, he's unclean forever. And for an unclean person, they shall take of the ashes of the burnt heifer of purification for sin and running water, shall be put there into a vessel, and a clean person shall take hyssop and dip it in the water and sprinkle it upon the tent and upon all the vessels and upon the persons that were there and upon him that touched a bone or a slain one or one dead or a grave. And the clean person shall sprinkle upon the unclean on the third day and on the seventh day. And on the seventh day he shall purify himself and wash his clothes and bathe himself in water and shall be clean at even. But the man that shall be unclean and shall not purify himself, that soul shall be cut off from among the congregation, because he hath defiled the sanctuary of the Lord. The water of separation hath not been sprinkled upon him, he is unclean. And it shall be a perpetual statute upon them, that he that sprinkleth the water of separation shall wash his clothes, and he that toucheth the water of separation shall be unclean until evening. And whatsoever the unclean person touches shall be unclean, and the soul that toucheth it shall be unclean until evening. I mean, it gets kind of frightening if you understand if whatever the unclean touches.
All the time, every day.
Huh?
It's like everybody's unclean every day.
Yeah.
Now let's go to First John.
Well, what about the clean person? Who's the clean person?
Christ. Well, it's only Christ, but you remember the typifying of it was the little child that lived in the house of stone that was born for that purpose.
But is it like in the body? Is it someone who sees something?
No. The only.
This is just a picture.
Yeah, it's always a parable. Never a literal.
You know, when it talks about redeeming the time because the days are evil, it's like I can I can see in this context why days are evil, because I mean, there's so much uncleanness. I mean, everybody just touched something and touched something else, and it's like, you know, the days are evil, so the time has to be redeemed.
The vision unto the day is the uncleanness thereof.
1 John 5, verse 4, whatsoever is born of God overcometh the world, and this is the victory that overcometh the world, even our faith. Who is he that overcometh the world but he that believeth that Jesus is the Son of God? And this is he that came by water and blood, even Jesus Christ. Not by water only, but by water and blood. And it is Spirit that beareth witness, because the Spirit is truth. For there are three that bear record in heaven, the Father, the Word, and the Holy Ghost, and these three are one. And there are three that bear witness in earth, the Spirit and the water and the blood, and these three agree in one. We've got to apprehend those waters. He came not by blood only, not by Spirit only, not by blood and Spirit only. He came by water, by blood, and by Spirit. This isn't here for an accident. You can't just ignore it. They wouldn't talk about the water agreeing with the three in heaven unless it had some pretty strong meaning here. And remember, John's lineage was from the priesthood. As far back as he went, and he'd grown up, his early years were the training. I mean, that's what he was being taught, was the priesthood. He knew the ashes. He knew the waters of separation. He knew the waters of jealousy. He knew the leprosy and the water. And he wrote. And you can say, well, I'd be much better off if I didn't know any of this. Let's just go down and join the Baptist church and just talk about evangelizing people all the time. Well, that'd be simple.
Boring.
But
no, that's not that may not. I mean, what's worse is to hear this stuff for this many years and still have the understanding of a rock, you know, regarding it, and all the, you know, the emphasis that's placed upon it. And I mean, it's hard to communicate, you know, because it's not just you don't understand it. You know, it's mixed with shame because you don't understand it. It's mixed with doubt that you don't understand. It's mixed with fear that you don't understand it. Or that, you know, you're dull of hearing. And it doesn't do the same thing, you know. And I could, you know, at the same time you could say, Larry, just, you know, say, soul be at rest, be at rest. And I can let that go. You know, I mean, that's capable. I know I'm capable of going through that and setting those things aside. And yet there's this other part that, you know, there's a reason that I respond like this. And so there's a, you know, somehow, you know, it is important, you know, and I respond like this so that, you know, I'm set up for the understanding, I believe. I'm set up to hear what it is, you know, so I can... You know, I don't just know it mentally. I can know it in all parts of me.
But you have to hear that what I heard that you just said was that we shouldn't study this stuff.
No.
I mean, that's what you communicated. Because we shouldn't study this stuff because it seems to confuse me. That's what you've just communicated to me.
I thought he was saying that he responds the way he does because so that he can understand it.
I mean, one part of me believes that's why I'm fitted for understanding. I mean, I'm made to, you know, everything about me is in the, you know, except the understanding is there, so I could know it in body, mind, and spirit. I mean, it's like everything is there so that I just wouldn't have just a mental understanding. And yet, and then I sit for lo these many years, and have all the understanding of a rock.
Oh shoot, Solomon didn't understand this.
You know about it, and it.
Do you understand
this? What I'm saying is it's frustration mixed with guilt and shame at being in that place, and you could say to me, Larry, say to your soul, be at rest. And I could say to my soul, be at rest, and I would be at rest about it. But then I would be like in that place of, you know, why am I, you know, I'm like this for a purpose so that I can understand it, I believe. You know, from everything that you've talked about, you know, it's, I'm set up for the complete understanding. You know, in all parts of me.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. But by the same token, I would say to you that there will never be understanding if you are listening in shame or guilt. Then we have to stop everything and go back to the blood. I mean, you understand? Because then the blood has to be applied instead of the water until the shame and guilt is apprehended. And once shame and guilt are fully covered by the blood, then the waters can be apprehended. But the whatever it is that's the prescription is for whatever need there is. I mean, it isn't, I didn't understand the ashes of the red heifer until we became a body. I understood the other stuff. I didn't understand, for instance, why the ashes of the red heifer, it's the only offering where the blood is burned. Well, that violates everything else in the law. And it's a female. It violates everything else in the law. But my point to you is that if you have any guilt or shame about this, then we have to stop and you go back and apprehend the blood again. Or that you have to see the blood has covered that. So that guilt and shame are gone forever. Because if the guilt and shame is there, then there's no apprehension.
Well, it might be just uncleanness. I don't understand the difference.
Well, I'm just talking about the words that you used.
Yeah. And from my understanding, they're all the same.
But my point is, I can't comprehend why you would have guilt or shame for not understanding something. That doesn't compute in my mind.
It's a good thing I'm here, so that you'll finally understand what.
Well, no, I mean, I really don't understand. Yeah. The only way that could have any strength in you is you think you should be different than you are.
Well,
then there will.
I don't even understand it. I mean, it's not in every aspect of my life, that's for sure. You know, I'm not incapable or you know, or perceived as such. There are certain, you know, and I don't know what it is that brings me to that place. And I would have been just as, you know, I found myself, you know, wanting to at some point just escape out from under it. But I also believe that there's some, you know, I feel free enough that I can at least talk about it. You know, so I don't feel, you know, that weird about it that I'm in a hole.
You're not having to defend yourself.
No, I don't. You know, as a matter of fact, I don't feel threatened in talking about it like, you know, like I have in the at other times. I don't feel angry about it. You know, but there is a part of me that's. Feels dull.
Yeah, but I want you to step out of yourself for a minute. And I want you to see something. I want you to be able to see that feeling of whatever it is, whatever you call it, dullness or guilt or shame, that was like a childish thing that had value a long time ago. Because without that, if you hadn't had that, if you hadn't gone through those exercises, then you could never have come into the body. I mean, that was the weakness that brought you here. But I want you to see that you can divorce it forever now. It's lost its value. You don't need it anymore. It's just a habit that's sort of hanging on like something that's you're dragging along with you. And what it is every time you feel... that you, if there's something you don't completely apprehend or understand, then rather than just saying, wait a minute, I understand that, all of a sudden, all of this stuff that you're dragging with you comes along back into the equation. All I can say is you can, by the word and by the agreement of the body, take and cut that baggage tonight forever, that you never have to feel weird or upset about not understanding something. I mean, my God, you probably understand it 5,000 times more than Gary does, and Gary doesn't feel weird. And he's not, you know.
I don't know. It's like this.
But we can do it by agreement. We can do it by authority of agreement, by declaration. That's what you want to hear. You don't have to, whether you can, you go into a trip where you feel shame or hurt or dull or angst or nervous when you don't understand something. What I'm saying that you can cut that off forever, never have to, and we can do it by declaration tonight if you want to.
Yes.
But unless it's become a familiar and you want to keep it with you.
I don't know how not to. That's the only thing I've ever. It's the only thing I know.
But hear me. But can't you understand? It's a thing that causes you, has caused you a lifetime of misery and self doubt.
But before we declare it, I just want to ask: how does anybody else deal with the not knowing of something? I mean, it's the only thing I don't know how anybody else even.
What?
Even deals with it. That's what I don't even understand.
The way I dealt with it was 12 hours a day study until I apprehended it. The way others deal with it is an understanding that it'll be apprehended in time. I mean,
or that Oli spent 12 hours
in study. Gary doesn't understand any more about this than you do. He's not weird. Doug?
Well, I was having a great sense of anticipation about.
But my point is, what I want you to hear is that you don't have to do that anymore. Do you understand? Nobody else. I don't want to do this to you.
Harry
does it some, but it doesn't get to this degree.
And I understand it because I do it. I know what you're talking about, and when I'm doing it, I feel exactly like you do. But I also can hear what he's saying, especially since he's saying it to you and not me. You don't have to do it. We can agree, and this can be broken.
See, it seems like it's supposed. I mean, it's like in my maybe it's my convoluted way of thinking that, all right, then you're supposed to be in this place. You're supposed to, you know, it serves a purpose to be in this place.
No, it doesn't. It's lost its purpose.
It has served a purpose.
It's served a purpose in the past. Now it's lost it. All it's done is to create anxiety in you, and that's, and therefore it's served. It's gone forever if you want it to be. But
let me say the thing that I think pertains here too, that I was getting touched by, is that in 1913 it talks about the one who will not sprinkle himself with the water or let himself be sprinkled, that's the one who's cut off. And that's the point where it's time to let yourself be sprinkled and be clean.
It doesn't matter. Let me tell you about understanding a minute. The priesthood in the ancient, I don't know if you've ever apprehended this, I don't know if I've ever talked about it very clearly, but the priesthood was genetic.
You could have an idiot.
Right. You could have. You most of the time did have, because there was inbreeding.
It didn't matter.
Norwegians marrying bunch of cousins.
And so the idea of not understanding, in the society, there was a very, very few. In the time of Christ, you could put them, I mean, the ones that saw the mystery, you could count them in one hand, probably. I mean, just before Christ. Hillel, Gamaliel, are the only, and Rabbi Jose, are really the only three that made it, that where there was this kind of apprehension, where there was a mystery apprehended.
How many really knew the law was spiritual?
But it doesn't matter, because you're sanctified by the body, because the body is your covering in all areas. And then the body's covering is Christ. So, but you never have to feel inadequate. And that's the thing that transpires in you. Something takes place, and this old-timey, way back, I have to prove something, feeling of inadequacy comes in. And what your mind has done is your mind has convinced you that is a good thing, that it's necessary for you to be that way. Well, it's not. It was necessary for a time, but now it's lost its purpose. You never once again, for the rest of your entire life, have to feel inadequate. You never once have to feel weird about not understanding something. You never once have to feel guilt or shame for not having the answer. You can cut that off forever. But you have to want it cut off. There's a secret part of you that thinks this has purpose. Part of it is, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe part of it is that you, in the times past, have convinced yourself that you're doing that so that you test Ole.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, I'm not sure what you just said, but I think I agree with you.
Okay. Well, yeah. I know it spiritually, but I mean, I know it. So I'm telling you, you've given yourself a role that is not have a function anymore. You've got a much higher function in the body than that idiotic one. You can be in a place where you never once, for the rest of your entire life, have to feel inadequate. Not once. Now, but you have to decide whether that's attractive. It will like, Let me give you an example of what happened. Different times in my illustrious career, when I was under huge stress or shot or whatever happened, I would, you know, the unit that I worked for, we had to be cleared by psychologists or psychiatrists or whoever it was when we were under that kind of stress before we went back and did our stuff. And I don't remember even the words. I don't remember, but I only remember a feeling. And the doctor, it was a psychologist that said that something to me about that there was this quirk or weirdness in me that I always felt like I had to be I don't know how to put it, the I can't even remember the word for it because I can't even think that way anymore. But I had to be this certain way in whatever circumstance I was in. And he told me that was mental illness. And I told him, if that's mental illness, then that's what I want, because that's what has defined me my entire life. And he understood it. I mean, he's going to send me off.
And what was the quirk?
I don't even remember. I mean, it had something to do with I remember it had something to do with intelligence, but I don't remember what it was. This was many, many years ago. And I was in a state of shock after being hit by that landmine. And then so I had to be evaluated before they let me go back in the field. And I can't remember what it was.
Well, probably most of us weren't born then.
It wasn't. You weren't.
Was it the Valley Guinea?
No, this was no. This was in 1957, but I can't remember what it was, and this is embarrassing.
He was probably being afraid of forgetting things.
Yeah.
But
it was some quirk of personality in which I always had to be a bad guy. Is the only way.
You'd like to make people mad.
No, it was worse than that. It was be a rebel, be a bad guy, but not a rebel like, I mean, be a real bad guy. Like I used to do weird shit. And I couldn't let go of that then, because that's what had defined me my entire life. And if I let go of that, who would I be?
It's a shame that you can't remember, because everybody's going to fill in the blank.
but because you knew it and accepted it,
he said I was okay.
You were clean.
Right. Well, I wouldn't be the
psychiatrist
like bullshit.
But it's like his is kind of a fall guy kind of thing, because it's a negative deal.
Mine wasn't much different. Except mine was more violent. I was.
Oh, okay. So this is what's defining Larry.
Right. This position is defining Larry. Who will he be? Well, he'll be covered forever. He'll be a member of the body. He'll be never alone. He'll be all of those advantages.
But the Antichrist would like him to think he can't let go.
Well, he would like you to think that
there'd be nothing there.
Yeah. So you've got a risk going without knowing.
But the point of it is I think that you've confused it in your mind by thinking that this is your role in the body.
And there's some redemption.
It's redemptive. It's something good about it.
In me, I know in me.
Well, I know that place that you're talking about. I don't know if this is tied to that. I know what you're saying. You know, because it was fear that maybe we could be getting off into something weird or you know that somehow. But I don't feel that about this.
I know, but what I'm saying is both of those places come from the same root.
Well, okay.
That's what that root is. What has to be destroyed. Let the axe be laid to that root, so you never again have to feel separate. You never again have to feel inadequate.
Because they both do stem from a basic sense of somewhere down. I won't know enough.
Yeah.
You know, I won't see enough. Somehow, it'd be many, many people farcing.
Well, but my point is, all of us have to face that. I mean, stop and look. I mean, what right do I have to teach? I have no credentials. I don't speak. I mean, I can minimally translate, Greek and Hebrew, but I don't speak it. I have no basis for study. Unless I go back, 1600 years, there's not even anybody that agrees with me. I mean, I had all the feelings of inadequacy that anybody does.
You just didn't know it.
Oh, yes, I did.
Yeah.
I knew it intimately and totally. It would define my being for 2 or 3 years. I mean, the idea of thinking of myself as adequate or inadequate, I mean, those kind of things don't even enter my... I mean, I'm not... That's like gone forever. I don't even think about that kind of shit anymore. But I sense that there is this position in you that feels guilty about if you're not understanding anything. I mean, I sense it. I know it. And that is just craziness that can be forgotten. Because it's self-defeating, because it puts you in a state of anxiousness, and the anxiousness creates the turmoil, and the turmoil prevents the understanding.
Once it starts, you don't hear the rest of the time. That's what happens to me. I get that.
Yeah, I know that. The stuff, it's just, I can agree with the declaration, like I agreed with Garrett, when we broke our contract, I just can't see it all, and that's even
okay. I want you
so lodged in with it,
This has nothing to do with cleanness or uncleanness. I just want you to think about it over the next week, okay, and think of and see if it's something that would be appealing to you in all levels. And if we need to talk about it, come over and talk.
See if what would be appealing to
this declaration of being cut off totally from that part of your being.
Oh God, yes, it's appealing. There's no doubt about it. If it didn't seem like it was a righteous pursuit, I wouldn't.
Yeah, but my point to you is, that's why I think there's a part of you that thinks it's righteous. That's what I want you to think about.
Yeah, guilt is guilt and those kind of things are part of
of
righteousness.
Yeah, but this is more so. This is this thing to do that it has to do with some definition of your role is to protect the body from me.
Well,
you have the number. I mean, no, but I want you to see that can't possibly be right. It causes the complete possibility. There can be not any fellowship because that's always so that has to be declared null and void. But that has justified the other stuff. That's the area I want you to get a hold of. Does anybody know what I'm talking about?
I don't want to take anything away from what Larry's hearing, but I just realized I've had a role too that I've played in my being, you know, that's helped define some of my work around here in my secret man.
Yeah.
And I don't want to, you know, I won't carry that any longer.
Well, on one level, I would say, that you have inspected my teaching and my life for 17 years. You know, I pray that there could be some comfort now.
Well, there is.
Okay, I know. That's on one level. That's just the Ole Anthony level. On the spiritual discernment level, is that shadow, and I think that's probably all it is a shadow, is preventing you and us from being who we are. And it's probably not just in you, as Gary said, there's that other... His role is, I mean, having to protect you from me.
Well, I felt like I was the other side of the balancing rod or something. I felt so opposite to you that I was necessary to polarize so that there would be balance. You know? It's been a defining position in me, and I'd forgotten all about it. But it was already locked in.
Yeah.
So
it too has to be abandoned.
I don't want to abandon it. Yeah. If we tip over, we tip over.
Because it's then touching the dead body.
Right. Yeah. And it's gleeful to see this stuff. Enough.
Where are you?
You said that waiting for the other foot to fall feeling, you know, I don't know.
But that's the point. The other foot to fall will cut forever that cord. It's not a negative thing. Let the other foot drop. I mean, can you understand that having defined that once as a role for yourself,
yeah,
then if today you're in that position, you're touching a dead body.
Yeah.
And if you're touching a dead body and refuse the waters of jealousy or the waters of purification, then the other foot will drop. But if you are in that position and say, Father, let the waters flow, then you can be forever, ever rid of the need to feel shame for not understanding or feel guilt for not being in a certain way. You can truly then abandon yourself. But there's a, you know, this If you still feel that you need to have that as a role, then it really makes me sad.
Well, no, I don't. I don't feel that. If I thought that, then I couldn't speak at all. I could never speak. I could never come. I could never talk. I could never do anything.
Well, that's
and not... I believe that, you know, that I.
But you've been.
There's nothing wrong with the way I am right now, even. According to this understanding, except, you know, there's a fear here that, you know, that hasn't been addressed. That, like I said, I think I'm in the perfect, I'm made exactly the right way to understand it, in all the ways that that I should understand it.
But I'm telling you that if there is no peace, then the understanding is impeded. There is never an excuse to be without peace. Never.
Well, it's not a matter of willing.
But it's willing to be satisfied. If you're saying that being in a position of no peace is exactly where you should be, that's what I heard you say.
That's not what I meant, maybe.
Okay.
I'm saying that the weakness, the whatever it is, you know, the is God made me this way something so that it rings true, so everything about it doesn't just hit me on a mental level.
I understand, Larry, but listen, what happens in this process is that it doesn't become weakness, it becomes strength. Because the anxiety creates a universe that fills the temple. And so it's not weakness, it's strength. It's taking a stand. And it forces you into positions of self-justification and self-analysis and comparisons and all the other things. Where I'm saying to you, you never again have to be in that position. You don't have to be, you can ask questions and be in a position of the flow without ever leaving peace. I know that's desirable to you, but for some reason you're resisting it because you're not hearing something. I mean, do you think the position of no peace is virtuous? Is right?
I think it's part of the walk.
It's not.
I think, you know, that's, my soul that, then, is troubled.
Then you're
you know, just, what shall I say? For this hour came I into the world. Okay. You know, my soul is troubled. I think that's not a continuum, but I think it is part of the part and parcel of being in the walk is that that's going to happen sometimes.
It's part and parcel of being in the wilderness.
Yeah. Or in the Garden of Gethsemane.
But he did it so you don't have to in the garden. We walk into the promise and we can be in a state of peace.
It's something you've already done.
Been through the Garden of Gethsemane. He's already been on the cross. That's why we can glory in tribulation. And you can't glory in tribulation if you're not in peace. Can you hear me, Larry? As a believer, there's never a justification for not being at peace. Peace I leave you. The word leave there is permanent.
Yeah, I mean,
my peace I give unto you.
Being troubled in your spirit doesn't mean, I mean, being at peace, when I think of that, it means believing that God is in control, even when I'm not,
But it doesn't matter what we think peace means. Peace is a technical term. It means the absence of againstness.